How you doing today, Marty?
I'm well, healthy, very isolated, slightly bored, but that's my normal state. So I haven't even remotely got cabin fever yet. How are you going?
You staying social distanced?
Very social distance. Yes. Staying well away from people. I did have to warn a gentleman at the supermarket who encroached my personal space in the managed queue outside, where everyone was keeping 2 meters, at least 2 meters distance. And this guy just got closer and closer, and I just turned over, gave him my best Paddington stare. Fans of Paddington will know what this means, and said, "Excuse me, mate, you're getting a bit too close." And he backed off and apologized, and it was all good. Yeah, people are, by and large, that I've seen, observing the social distancing, delivery people are dropping stuff off at the door, knocking and immediately leaving. They're not waiting around for signatures. Yeah, so far, so good.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. I was out today for a little bit. I had an appointment. It was an essential place that I went. I'll just leave it at that. But I had an appointment, and I went out. It was funny. I drove past my bank, and of course, you know, the bank is closed. And just to give you an idea of how much the Germans actually follow directions is fascinating. There was a sign outside the bank that said, "Please, we ask only one person inside at a time," because, you know, the whole long thing about, you know, exposure and pandemic, social distancing and all that stuff. And not only were they observing the one person going into the bank at a time, they were also observing the 2 meter social distancing in the queue out the door. So they were just standing there, you know, just queued up, just standing there waiting, you know, holding their, you know, swinging their arms back and forth while they're waiting. It was fascinating. But, you know, if you were to see something like that, a sign like that in, say, like the United States, people would just walk past it. They wouldn't care. You can't depend on people to actually do something that needs to be done in most cases like that. But anyway, I digress.
It's worth mentioning because, it does. I can see how it looks strange to people with these long queues outside supermarkets or shop with people interspersed and somebody counting the number of people in and the number of people out so that they are not letting more people into the store than the square footage will allow. So that if we need 2 square meters per person at any given time, or maybe it's 4 square meters, I'm not quite sure of the maths on this, then the number of people inside the building itself is critical, because if you've got too many people in there, you physically can't social distance. So it might look strange. It might feel weird. I've been used to such things when exercising for a decontamination station at an airlock whilst in the military. So spacing between everybody protecting themselves to the nth degree, using decontamination processes, using all the PPE, that kind of stuff. I've been there, done that. And although these are unprecedented times for most people, anybody who's been in the armed forces in the last 40 years will understand these processes, all about keeping a distance, you know, decontamination with the washing of the hands, so on and so forth. At least we're not having to throw Fuller's Earth all over our faces.
That's true. And, you know, I was, it's funny. I was, I'm going to hold this back. I'm not going to talk about it today, but I was reading an interesting thing today. It was an excerpt that was taken out of a diary from 1666. And you know what was going on in London during that time, don't you?
Yeah. There was the plague followed by the Great Fire.
Exactly. And the excerpts that were written out of there, it was a diary, basically. Someone was keeping a journal of the times. You know what? I'm just going to get the name. And you might actually even know the name.
Samuel Pepys.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And it was basically, it was what social distancing looked like in 1666. You know, late 1665, early 1666. And I kid you not, I'm not going to get too deep into this because I really want to cover it. And I know we got some other things we want to talk about today. But it says here by 1665 and by late fall of that year, roughly 7,000 people were dying every week in London alone.
Mm-hmm.
If you can imagine, right? That was just, you talk about that. I mean, those are astronomical numbers even today. if you can imagine back in that time, it goes on here. I mean, about all this, you know, all these different things. And it was fascinating to see some of the stuff that they had, like shopkeeps, for example. You know, everybody was sent home, but they still had shopkeeps open. Well, shops open, and the shopkeepers would actually have dishes of vinegar in their shops. And they would ask that the patrons would drop their coins as payment into the dishes of vinegar. So, I mean, essentially, that's what they were using for sanitizer back in those days. And I mean, you think about that today, you're like, oh, that's crazy. There's so much about that that I want to talk about at some point, but I really don't want to get into it today because it's fascinating. And you know what,
subject.
Though, I tell you what, the next time you're around, I'll hold it for you. The next time you're around, and we can talk about it then if you like.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be
but
great.
It was fantastic to read that today. It was really, really, really a lot to take in. And you see how much things have changed. But you know what they say, the more things change, the more they stay the same.
That's true.
Oddly enough, I mean, that's if you start going down through and you read a lot of the things that were in there, you'll understand where we got what we call the Red Cross today. It's fantastic. Okay. Let's jump over. Hi, Bruce. How are you?
Hello.
How are you there?
Yeah.
Good
yeah.
to see you.
Yeah.
I'm running a little behind is all.
But, how's quarantine day four?
You know, I had this crazy, crazy dream. All right?
I had to rattle his tree. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I had this. It was totally wild. You know, there was this virus or something that got released and everybody's on lockdown and stuff. And oh, wait, that's not a dream. It's reality. Wow. Yeah, it's still. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
okay.
Crazy.
Yeah. All right.
It's still crazy.
By the way, I was watching the press conference this morning. The Navy hospital ship Comfort arrived in New York City this morning. It was a big ordeal. And Mayor de Blasio announced a $500 fine for anyone who is caught breaking the social distancing rules. So moving right along, let's jump over to the UK. We're going to be focused on the UK today. First of all, I tell you what, before I jump into all this UK stuff, before I start heading in a certain direction, is there anything apart from your little incident there at the supermarket? Is there anything else going on over there that we don't really know about outside of the bubble of the United Kingdom? Is there anything else apart from anything that that we need to know that you're seeing, that, you know, what's going on with the supermarkets? What are the stocks like? That kind of thing. Are you seeing people start to get restless? The people you talk to, those kind of things?
The supply chain is almost keeping pace, and it's only going to take another 2 or 3 days before shelves are fully stocked again. And, you know, supermarkets will have everything you want and the choice that you want as well, because the supply chain is still getting through. Haulage drivers, anyone working in the transportation of food, they're considered to be key workers. Therefore, their children are allowed to go to school and they're allowed to go to work, but they still have to obey all the other rules. You know, if they develop symptoms, they are to self-isolate. They are not to go straight to a hospital. They have to wait until they're sure that they have something that needs medical treatment before they even call their doctor. So, yeah, the supply chain is keeping up. People, by and large, are obeying the rules. Our government, at least, seem to be doing everything they can to help keep everybody going. So there hasn't been that many incidents of a short temper or anything like that. But there are cases of people being stopped by the police and asked, where do you think you're going? Why are you out? You know, that they are asking these questions. Funnily enough, an MP, Labour Party MP, Stephen Kinnock, who is the son of Neil Kinnock, the former Labour Party leader, thought it was a good idea to travel half the way across the country to take his father something for his birthday. Now, he's been hauled up and he's been criticised. And he said, well, his father's a vulnerable person and it's perfectly legitimate for me to travel across the country to take him something on his birthday. I am in two minds about this. It's something that we can cover just very briefly. And I believe I said it the other day. If you're allowed outside for an hour for exercise in the open air, then that's what the government are saying we are allowed. And that's what people should do, to go outside from their homes, take a good walk, come back, do your shopping, observe all the social distancing, and just stay safe and stay uninfected. But when you've got people like Stephen Kinnock doing this kind of thing, it sends the wrong message to the rest of the populace. And I don't think he got nearly enough criticism for doing what he did.
I heard you mention him. No, I don't think it was him. It was his father that you'd mentioned at one point in time in one of our earlier, our real early podcasts, when we were talking about the way that your system is kind of set up over there. And you had people like these, I believe the name you used was the Kinnocks, of people that have been established in the political realm for quite some time. That's where I recall the name from.
It's one of the political dynasties, but it's not really that older dynasty. Kinnock was prevalent in the 80s, but he was a staunch anti-European, as in anti-European Union advocate, while he was leader of the Labour Party. But funnily enough, he wound up getting one of the top jobs, sat there in ermine in his robes in the European upper house, and is on a tidy pension. So, but he's back in the UK now that we're out of the EU. He's come back into the UK rather than living in Brussels, where he and his wife were.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah,
not a lot of work for a former MEP of the EU representing the UK over there right now. And I think they all got fired. I'm not sure what happened there. But moving right along, you said something there about people. You know, we were talking about social distancing and things like that. Well, you were talking about social distancing. It says here, and I was reading a few things this morning out of what's going on over there. A lot of people are defying these lockdowns. And I know you said that people are being mindful of such as things like the social distancing and things like that. But a lot of people are just saying, eh, you know, don't have time, which many Americans are doing near about the same thing, I'm sorry to say. You know, I was talking to somebody yesterday and they said, you know, look, supermarkets are still full. People are hanging out at ice cream stores. They're going to parks and they're just not getting it. But here it says that UK is going to begin tougher action against those who are ignoring it. And it says that it brought in tough measures earlier this week to curb the spread of the virus, to ensure people obey the government's virtual lockdown, which many thousands are feared to have so far ignored. So the police have now been given new powers to issue instant fines for those who leave their homes without good reason or gather in groups of more than two people. And in one instance in northern England, one police force began introducing random vehicle checkpoints to ensure that new rules are enforced, while the head of the Church of England told Britons who are flouting the instructions to get your act together. Is this going to force people to get their act together?
Yeah, I think it will. But you've always got, in a country of 65 million people, you are going to have some people who are refusing to cooperate and to toe the line. Well, I don't wish coronavirus on anybody, but those people who are continually flouting the regulations, the rules that have been put upon us to protect us, are going to wind up catching. And, you know, that's all very well and good for them as individuals. That's their choice. But the people who they then come into contact with and spread the disease, they're the ones that I feel very sorry for. So, yeah, I think people are going to be a bit more disciplined. It's a terrible word. No one likes using it, but they need to obey the rules, be obedient, and get us through this. The curve is starting to flatten out. I watched the live transmission earlier today, and the number of reported cases has started to just flatten out. And within a few more days, that will start to reduce dramatically. And when that does, then the government can start thinking about stage by stage bringing us back to normality. And I'm sure that's what's going to happen, because we said the other day, we were all adamant that, you know, this is not a long-term thing and we wouldn't put up with it as a long-term thing. But if they can demonstrate through the statistics and through the actual figures that this is starting to work, then great, perhaps we can get back to normality a bit sooner than we expected. Certainly not an 18-month period. Although I'm sure it's going to take that long to get the, you know, a viable, working and tested vaccine.
Yeah. And on top of that, I mean, you're looking at things now where like today, U.S. President Donald Trump, he ordered 30 days of intense social distancing, meaning, look, you know, just stay away from people. I don't know. Did you go back and listen to the podcast from a couple of days ago when GP was talking about what needs to be done? Did you give that a listen? Because when he put that together, that's precisely what needs to be done. And people just aren't taking it seriously. I mean, I've not heard that on any television network by these so-called experts. And more than that, what's even worse about all this, forget the social distancing, but that has to happen regardless. If we're going to get through this as a people, forget what country you're from. If we're going to get through this as a people, then that has to happen. It's not something we need to think about doing. It's something we have to do. So I get it, right? It's got to happen. Now, the other side of this is I'm talking about strictly the United States here. There is not one person or one expert in some expensive suit anywhere on any television station, in any newspaper, talking about how you need to boost your own immune system naturally to fight off infections by eating and living a healthy lifestyle. There is not one single mention of that. None. Zero. That, in my personal opinion, is criminal in and of itself, because all people are being told is just sit at home and wait for a vaccine and we'll send you money. I'm talking about the United States here. So,
Okay. Here in the UK, every TV channel, the early morning program, they've got some kind of health element to it. They've got people talking about nutrition, what to eat during this time, how to exercise as well. And you've got classes being run on TV. The thing that I worry about for the people in all of North America is the fact that it's such a big country, your central government hasn't made a carte blanche statement, and I don't know whether they could make a statewide policy that each state went on to lockdown.
No, they can't. That would be wholeheartedly.
That's why the Trumpster hasn't done it, because he physically can't do it. Here in the UK, we're about the size of one of your states, and we've done it. It's a policy that goes right the way across the country. Hmm. I mean, you've got uncontrolled borders between states, haven't you? So you've got people crossing from state to state, and therefore possibly carrying the infection with them. We've got maybe 150 to 200,000 people still abroad that the government have said, come home. Our government is now working with commercial flights, and where commercial flights aren't possible, working on chartering flights to get people back from all over the world. So we might get another little peak very soon when these people come back from whatever country they've found themselves in. And, you know, that's a lot of countries globally to consider, where the infection control may not be as good as we're finding here, for instance. And I'm sure that there's countries in other parts of the world that are doing a better job than we are. But we are really trying to slow down the rate of infection. So in the next few days, there could be up to 200,000 Britons returning home, of which a proportion will be infected. So there is likely to be a peak again. After we've just flattened the curve a little bit, there's likely to be another peak when these people come back, unless they're properly quarantined and managed. So yeah, it's a big task. I think all of these politicians that have clamoured for power and the glory of the role are thinking, I should have been careful what I wished for, because you never know what you're going to get. They're having to work so hard to get us through this crisis.
Some of them are, yes, that's true. And then some of them, I read this other story the other day. There's a council, and I hope you forgive me if I mispronounce this. I do apologize. Neath and Port Talbot Council have said, did I get it right?
Yes, you did. Yeah.
All right.
Although in Wales they say Port Talbot.
Okay.
But you know, you were spot on, well done.
Okay, fair. Well, I forgive my American accent. I do apologize. But it says that
I thought you were Canadian. Okay, sorry, Karen.
You're fired. We're done. Cut. We're done for the day. Okay.
Right.
No, it's okay. You still owed me for the other day when I was taking
it.
A poke. You're going to get something better than that? Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So there's a Brit council that will be using drones now to try and track and trace people down that are ignoring the stay-at-home orders. And I actually saw some video of this last night, as a matter of fact. It was a drone that, you know, it was one of those quadcopter drones, you know, that's got the four propellers on each side. And it's hovering about, I don't know, 200 meters above people that are just, I kid you not, Marty, they're out in the middle of the countryside alone walking their dog. That's all they're doing. They're well away from people. It's not like they're in a mass or anything like that. They're well away from people, and they're being tagged as an unessential activity or something.
Yes.
And then this drone will then hover over, and it'll actually say, you know, this is a message from blah blah count, you know, Neath or Port Talbot Council. Follow the given rules. You must stay home. Like, so it's literally yelling at them to go home.
And if facial recognition had been brought into the books, you know, had been made legal as well, they'd be using that too to find those people. Although I stated earlier on that, you know, people need to obey the rules. When they were first given and described, they had too many loopholes in them. And this is one of them. Yes, you're more than 2 meters away from someone. Yes, you're out in the countryside, but you've also had to drive your car there. So at any point in the journey from your house to the country park or natural beauty site car park, if you'd have had a collision, you would have brought the emergency services out, come into contact with other people. What that doesn't do is totally mitigate the risk of infection if you go out to these places of natural beauty. You also, if something happens while you're there, you have an accident, you fall down, you break a leg, you've then got emergency services having to go out to a remote location to rescue you, to look after you. So it is an unnecessary thing to do, to go long distances away from your home where you may or may not come into contact with other people, even if you are, you know, isolated out in the countryside. I want to go fishing. I've got beaches less than a mile away. I've got a garage full of fishing rods. All I want is some bait and to go and sit on the beach, but I'm not doing it.
That'd be pretty peaceful right now. And you probably get some good catch too.
It would be absolutely lovely, but it's only a mile away from my house, but I'm still potentially causing a problem. And that's what the government are asking us not to do. And, you know, from a curious perspective, I want to see, as we mentioned before, what the air quality figures are for the middle of next month, say, when we've had like 6 weeks of low activity. It'll be interesting to see. So the reason they're being buzzed by drones is because they're in places where they would have to have been got to by car, and by taking those unnecessary car journeys, they are putting others at risk.
Here I am thinking, okay, here's a person that just goes out in the middle of the countryside to observe social distancing, to stay away from people, and it's still a criminal offense. So, I mean, I just look at that and I think, well, you know, that's honestly, I can't say that I would probably do anything different. I wouldn't even begin to give it a thought like that. But at the same time, I mean, I guess I can kind of cheat a little bit because I kind of live out in the countryside anyway, so I can just go. I mean, I don't really have to worry about all that stuff, but I guess that's one of the luxuries. But still.
Yeah. No, I'm sort of with you, because I felt the same way. I was thinking, oh, all right, I can't go to the town, I can't go to a bar, I can't go to a library even, but I could go for a nice walk through the woods.
Yeah, go through the countryside.
But to get to the woods, I've got to drive 11 miles. And it's that 11-mile drive, when they're trying to keep everybody in, they're trying to take as much strain off of emergency services, so that's the police, the ambulance, fire and rescue, as possible. As soon as you put a car on the road, there is the potential for a collision. And in the first few days of the lockdown, there were reports, oh, yeah, there's a lane shut on this motorway, this road is closed, that road is closed, all due to accidents. There shouldn't have been anybody on the roads. In fact, there wasn't anybody on the roads. But these morons were speeding. Because the roads were empty, they were driving faster than they normally would, hitting corners that they would normally go around at 30 or 40 miles an hour, at 50 or 60 miles an hour, because the roads had been empty, and losing control of their vehicles. So you've got to see the government's point. As soon as you get in your car and start driving, there is the potential for a collision.
I want to jump over to a couple of cases that we've seen from some high-profile individuals, let's say. One of which, let's start with Charles. Prince Charles was diagnosed with COVID-19, and he's tested positive. We spoke on the last time, on the last podcast you were on. The royal family was moved out. Well, they moved them out and separated them before the actual supposed lockdown of London came in. So they were out, which, okay, whatever. I mean, even if they were locked, even if there was a lockdown, they could still get out. I mean, it's the royal family. So,
yeah.
I mean, they would still get them out of harm's way, you know, which makes perfect sense. But in this case, okay, so he tested positive. I saw the report today. I haven't heard much else about it, right? Ever since the diagnosis was made public, haven't heard anything else about it. Now, he is up there in age. I think he's in his 70s, right? Is that about right? Yeah. 70s? Okay.
Yeah,
which 70s. Puts him in the... which puts him in the high bracket for, you know, or in the bracket for a higher risk due to his age. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that the members of the royal family probably get, if there is such thing as the best healthcare in the world, they probably get it. There's no doubt about that. But the report I did see today said that he is on the road to making a recovery. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm pretty sure that they have deliberately not given a blow. You know, every second account of Prince Charles's infection and subsequent fighting of the disease. And if they're saying that he's, you know, he's making a recovery, then that is what is happening. They would say if anything untoward, you know, further untoward were to happen. Yeah, they are isolating themselves. They're not making a fuss, probably trying to be as little trouble to the government as possible at this time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the fact that he got infected in the first place was probably unavoidable. He's a public figure, meeting lots of people, and all of those different people have bumped into other people. Hence, you know, there's a strong chance of getting infected if you're a public figure, constantly shaking hands with strangers. So it's not surprising. Same goes for Boris. Same goes for the health secretary. You know, they have got the disease and they're fighting it off because they are fit and able to do so.
Mm-hmm. And which I was going to ask about Boris. I saw his video address last night to people where he said he's developed a mild cough, but he's obviously self-isolating and he's going to have everything done virtually and he's going to get away from everything. And, you know, I saw a video. Somebody from Southern Ireland actually sent me a video. Dominic Cummings coming out of number 10, running. Literally, he was running out of number 10 after he found out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I found out today that Dominic Cummings has also tested positive for COVID-19. I guess he didn't run fast enough. apparently that didn't work out too well for him. But Boris is tested positive. Dominic Cummings has tested positive. The health minister, as you said, has tested positive. Charles, who else is this going to get? And I hope that they all make a full recovery, by the way. I think that's first and foremost the most important. So it's quite concerning because, I mean, we saw similar... I don't want to jump to any conclusions here, but we saw the similar type of scenario playing out in the early days of Iran. Yeah. The health minister and then all of it started to spread through the cabinet. You notice,
yeah,
notice sure. A correlation here. So any word on Boris? Is there anything other than outside of the statement that he gave? Is number 10 saying anything else about him?
Obviously, he is keeping up with his normal prime ministerial duties, but he's doing it all remotely. The daily address was given out live today by Dominic Raab, led it, who's the foreign minister. But obviously, all of that is discussed through the cabinet office with Boris as the leader to say what is being pushed out, the message that's being pushed out. And, mm-hmm. you know, the other day we had at 8 o'clock, everyone was to step outside their back door, not their front door, if they have a back door, or go onto the balcony to clap their hands for the health service. And Dominic Raab tonight, you know, thanked those frontline health workers again. And this is going to sound terrible, but I wish he'd just get over that, because I know living and working in and around people who have such roles, they appreciate the thanks. But what I really wanted to hear from him was, and the scientific officer, I couldn't tell you who he is, but the guy who was giving us more information about the graphs, the number of new cases, how we compare with other countries, how their curve is, their other countries like Italy, the way their curve went and ours is likely to follow. You know, I'd rather they got on with that than this continuous round of you're all doing terribly well, thank you very much, because, you know, they know it, we know it. When everything's done and dusted, we can stop patting each other on the back. I hope the people that have done the most get properly rewarded for the way in which they have worked to save us all. So, yeah, I know it sounds terrible, but I've just had it, you know, a bit too much of all the continual thanks that politicians are giving out. I'd rather see the action.
Yeah, no, I can understand that. I can understand that. But at the same time, I mean, you're looking at it in the way that you're looking at it. But think about it from the perspective of, say, the person that's sitting at home tonight that doesn't know the certainty of what's going to come or what's not going to come. There, I understand why the politicians are behaving the way they're behaving, is because, on the contrary to certain politicians in the United States, it sounds to me like the ones in England are at least trying to keep up a sense of morale to the general public. That's what it sounds like to me, anyway.
Yeah, they are definitely trying to do that. But as an old and bold ex-serviceman, I've had enough of junior officers trying to cheer me up.
Okay, that's fair enough.
It's that kind of feeling. But yeah, they are doing a good job. Hopefully they are covering themselves. They will cover themselves with glory by the end of this, if the plan works.
Mm-hmm. Since we're talking about the health system, let's jump into this. It says that the UK has enough intensive care units, according to the predictions that you guys are going to be looking at. And that's a great thing, which means that you're not, at least at this point in time, looking at the current scenarios that are being run. I'm just looking over a thing here that was put out by Neil Ferguson at the Imperial College of London. He gave evidence that the UK's Parliamentary Select Committee on Science and Technology said that he expects the increases in the National Health Service capacity and ongoing restrictions to people's movements make him reasonably confident that the health service can cope with a predicted peak that the epidemic arrives in 2 to 3 weeks, as you said. Yeah. The UK deaths from the disease are now unlikely to exceed 20,000, he said, and it could be much lower. That's fantastic news, if he's right. If those predictions are correct, that's fantastic news. And on top of that, with you having experts saying that it's a good possibility, it's a strong possibility, this will not overwhelm your health system, that's even better. Because when you see a pandemic outbreak, it doesn't matter what country it's in, right? When you see a pandemic come along, or an epidemic, or whatever you want to call it, right? Whenever that happens, first and foremost, you have to look at the health system, the status of the health system in that country. If the health system collapses in a country, and it breaks containment, then it's all, I mean, you're just going to see the death rate just spiral downwards until it's just almost a societal collapse level. The health system in Italy is on the brink if it's not collapsed even partially already. Same thing, that the Spanish are headed for it now. That happened in China. You had a health system collapse there. And now you're running into an issue. I was talking to somebody today. You're looking at 19% in New York City alone, and this is where we're seeing the biggest spike in cases right now because of the densely populated area up there. 19% of the New York area health workers currently are already ill of this. So with uncertainty in and around them already. So that's one of the most important things that people kind of dismiss it. They think, oh, well, the health workers, they're going to fight this and they're going to take care of this. Well, they're just people like you and I, and they have to work, and they're exposed to that all day, every day. And I love and respect those people. They don't get paid nearly enough for what they do, as far as I'm concerned, especially at a time like this.
Italy, I don't know whether they did or they didn't, but our government and the NHS has mobilized people who are returning from retirement, as well as at least 250,000 volunteers. And these are people who have just volunteered to work inside these intensive care units. You've also got ventilators being built by groups of companies that have retooled to make ventilators, because that's the main weapon in the health service armament to get people who are severely affected by the virus through the dangerous phase where they could die from pneumonia back to breathing on their own and returning to health. So, yes, I think that is not too ambitious a claim to say that our health service is probably, given the predicted curves. Obviously, it could swing either way. We may have made too much provision, or we may have not made quite enough. But judging by the curve of the number of cases over time in Italy, our health service is in a position where it should be able to cope with the number of cases that require hospitalization, you know, when it comes.
Okay. Now, we still got some time here, so I wanted to get your take on this. This is a guy, I've known who this guy is for the better part of almost 15 years now. And this is a guy you're probably familiar with. This is a guy named Gordon Brown, former English PM.
Yes.
You remember him.
The unelected Prime Minister. He got to be Prime Minister.
Yeah, that's him. Yeah, okay.
Like 5 minutes.
Now, this guy, I remember the speeches that he was giving back then. He was talking about, you know, we need new world orders. We need world governments. We need that particular body to be created to deal with a crisis of some kind. Well, we didn't have a crisis of some kind like that 15 years ago. Well, guess what? We do today. And lo and behold, who do we have who's come out of the woodwork? We have Mr. Gordon Brown. He comes out and he's calling for a global government to tackle the coronavirus. The reason I took an interest in this guy is because this guy was one of the supposed leaders back in the 08 banking crisis. He really took center stage in UK politics when that was going on, which, by the way, he sold most of your gold during that time at record bargain basement prices, if you didn't know.
I'm grinding my teeth as you speak.
Yeah, he's quite an interesting individual. But anyway, he has urged world leaders to create a temporary form of global government to tackle the twin medical and economic crisis caused by the coronavirus outbreak. No. If anything, this is just my take, okay? If anything, what this shows, this whole pandemic, what this shows is a failure of precisely that. You had the European project, okay? It's failed. It's failed. You've got all these countries putting their borders back up, and you've got the only thing that's being let through are, you know, essential services, cargo, freight, you know, that kind of stuff. But as far as everything else goes, every respective EU country at this point in time is in self-preservation mode. That's what they're doing. It took them all of a month and a half too late to even realize that that was something that they might consider. But nonetheless, that's what's happened. The Chinese, okay, the Chinese lost a trade war with the US. They lost the deal with Taiwan. They lost the containment of Hong Kong. They look terrible. This whole NAFTA idea in the United States didn't work. We had to renegotiate the deal because it was so bad. Our country got screwed for about 30 years. Brexit. You guys were getting the short end of the stick in the EU deal. You guys saw the light. You voted. Took you 3 years, 3.5, 4 years to get out. But finally, with the election of Boris and basically a Brexit referendum number two, you finally said all you people in Brussels, you know, can go kick rocks. So essentially, if anything, this is, like I said, this is just my take. If anything, this proves that the world government project that they were working on all this time has failed. So now you want to create something else. You want to create an overarching structure above all this now when the first time around you failed. And look what this has done. Look what this single road supply chain has done. This just-in-time delivery system, this outsourcing everything to China or outsourcing everything from the UK to, you know, no disrespect to the people in India, but to India or to the East Bloc, you know, those countries. If anything, this proves that this type of a structure doesn't work. So why should we even entertain this type of an idea from this guy?
Well, we really shouldn't, because a lot of people have sympathy for Gordon Brown because he lost his daughter, very sad, and he was a genuine guy. He spoke from the heart on most things. He was a reasonably good chancellor, apart from those other things that you mentioned about selling all our gold. But at the end of the day, he's a dyed-in-the-wool Europhile and a staunch advocate of the European project. So yes, of course, he's going to spout off about these global government situations, which he thinks he might play a part in, perhaps. But I think you're right. I wouldn't say Europe has failed just yet. It is failing. One of the first signs of the failure is the UK leaving. The next is that with this contagion spreading across Europe, individual member states are closing their borders. They're not acting as a European superstate and resources being directed in a continent-wide way. it's down to whatever your country can do for you. I'm sure there will be some aid from Germany and France to other countries within the EU to help with this. But to begin with, they'll be sorting their own problems out first. So to that end, yes, it has failed. It's not acting like a super state. It's acting like 26 separate countries again.
I don't know that that's even a fair argument, really. Because if you look at the US, the states are kind of in a similar situation. You have states looking at shutting their border to other states. You have states that are essentially having to look after themselves first. I mean, so as much as I don't like the EU and the whole concept, I don't think that's really totally fair, given that, you know.
And that's why I wanted to say, when Johnny said it has failed, I'd say it is failing. It's not totally failed. If it comes out the other side of this, the way member states feel about each other might change a little bit. But at the moment, it's not behaving like the super state that it wanted to become.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
It's funny. And I respect your opinion on that. The only thing that I would see out of this at the moment, and this is a real concern. We know that Italy's been going through some tough ordeals down there. And this is one of the things that is concerning at the moment about Italy. And it's not widely talked about. So I'd like to talk about it for a couple of minutes. They're worried about societal collapse at the moment in Italy. And when I say societal collapse, I mean that. And I'm not talking about a health system collapse. I'm talking about society. Their economy, people have to remember, their economy has been shut for almost a month. That's very difficult to do. And it started with Northern Italy, is where they shut everything down. And most of the GDP comes out of that region in the north there. And so there's nothing that's moving. And what people have to understand is that people, I don't really think, grasp the fact of just how fragile the supply chain actually is for a country. And people just look at kind of how you put it earlier, Marty. You're going to go to the store in 2 or 3 days and everything's going to be back on the shelves. What happens when there's nothing on the shelves? What do you do then? People don't really think that far ahead on average. Yeah. On average, some people think about it, but
you look at Italy. Look at Italy. It's got this is what it's got going in its favor. It's got a luxury car industry, the Ferraris, the Lamborghinis. It's got a general run of the mill car industry, your Fiats. It's got food produce, the special pastas. It's got wine produce. It's got olive oil. It's got lemons. It's got oranges. It's a very fertile and productive country, but it's been so mismanaged through corruption and poor governments. I mean, at one point, I think they'd had an election every year since the Second World War.
Yes. And it's exactly that. It's poorly run and mismanaged. You're absolutely right.
So a country like Italy either needs to clean up its politicians or it needs to belong to the EU, which it does. And instead of the trickle-down wealth that we've all become used to under capitalism, and I'm in favor of capitalism because the alternative scares me too much. Instead of being the trickle-down, it needs to be given out in big handfuls to the mom-and-pop businesses, to the small businesses. Once the country is back up and running again, once the big fashion industry is churning out its overpriced material at a great rate of knots, and once the cars are being sold again, then that wealth needs to be trickled back down through taxation, through legitimate and non-corrupt government to the smaller businesses. That's what needs to happen.
You're absolutely right. And I think more to that point, it needs to be, and maybe you said this and I just didn't have that computed in my brain, but that money needs to be in Italy for the Italian people. It doesn't need to go to Brussels. It needs to stay in Italy. No. And it needs to go back to the Italians. That's how it needs to be, because they need to rebuild themselves through this debacle that we're going through now. But
I'm not sure, but Italy is one of the countries. Italy contributes a positive amount. It's one of the only 11. There used to be 11 countries that put in a positive amount. There's now 10 because we've left. And Italy puts in a positive amount, but it does get a rebate. But overall, it puts in more than it takes out. Well, it's time for Italy to keep more of its own money for longer, so that after the crisis has been, stopped, after the infection rate has gone to zero, that it can build itself back up again and not send the money to Brussels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one of the things that they're concerned about down there is like the government's actually, this is a legit concern. They're worried about, if you can believe it, they're worried about the mafia coming in down there and taking over things because it's so horribly mismanaged by the government, as you
put
it. What
do you mean taking over? They're already doing it.
The mafia. Yeah, they took over the government. Yeah.
The mafia, the Italian mafia, have been running the country since before the First World War. And it runs deep. It runs very deep. But by and large, it's, I don't know, I'm no expert on the mafia, but I do know that they are intrinsic to the whole way that the whole of Italy is governed.
Yeah, but at the same time, I mean, if you look at the way, and I'm speaking about, let's just say, businessmen in certain parts of the United States, okay? That's all I'm going to say. But yeah. So if, look, in areas, in certain areas in the country, in the United States, you would have businessmen open up storefronts, and it would be of service to the community, as in, you know, a cafe, a produce shop, a meat store, you know, these kinds of things. And surprisingly enough, the people that would live in that neighborhood, not only would they get the service from these businesses that were run by these businessmen, let's say, not only would they do that, also, while those businesses were up and running throughout the day and in the evenings, those were some of the safest neighborhoods in some of the hardest cities that you would even see today. Because now, why is that? Why would they be safer back then than they would now? And I'll tell you why. Because they used to hang out in the doorways of those businesses. They used to sit out on at a table and chair out in front of the business. And they would take care of anybody that would be causing any trouble, such as, you know, muggings or stirring up trouble or burglaries, those types of things. And now, why would they do that? Because it was bad for business. So they wouldn't want any of that nonsense going on. As a result, the crime rate would go down.
Absolutely. But the crime rate would go down here in the UK if everybody paid twice as much tax, so that we could pay for more police officers, so you had a higher police presence. Because that's what's happening. That's what happened there with the mafia, both in, was it called the Devil's Kitchen in New York? And
Hell's Kitchen.
And in Italy, in Sicily, and moving up through, you know, through the boot of Italy, all the way up to the north, what you've got is you've got the shopkeeper who pays his taxes to the government, and they pay for the police force. But then you've got the protection money being demanded by the mafia, the extortion rackets. So the shopkeeper winds up paying twice as much tax, one way or another. So, yeah, I can sort of see that. People would say nostalgically that, oh, the streets were safer in the days when the Krays were around in London, for instance. They kept all the troublemakers in order, but they were still criminals. They were still demanding money with menaces. They were still ripping people off for their property, their nightclubs. I want to buy your bar. If you don't sell it to me, you're going to get visits daily by thugs who will beat you up and smash your goods. So the people signed on the dotted line out of fear. So, yes, nostalgically, it might have seemed a safer, nicer place, but crime was still going on. And it's still going on in Italy and other parts of Europe as well, where you've got all these other mafias springing up, like in Spain with the Russian mafia, all the way down to Gibraltar, running the gambling, online gambling stuff as well. It's, yeah, the world's a pretty messed up place, as you are very aware.
Yes, I am. I am. But you know what, though? We were talking last night about world travel, and it's it teaches you so much. I mean, you've traveled the world. It teaches you so much, and it humbles you at the same time, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Do you know what? I'm not some kind of convert, but the Middle Eastern countries, particularly the UAE, their governments are so rich that they're virtually incorruptible because it's their royal family that performs the roles of the various ministers within their government. And so because of that, the country's GDP gets spent on its own people. But then again, you've got a country of 7 million people living there, of which only 1 million are Emiratis. Everybody else is an expat. And they're not getting the money from the oil wealth of the country. Only the Emiratis are. So, again, there's a a bit of a problem, but again, it's their country, and however they want to run it is how they should run it. And that's really what I'm saying about Italy. They need to use that money that the country can create through all those things I mentioned earlier, their agriculture, their wine producing, their luxury cars, their general purpose cars, their fashion industry. They need to use that to rebuild, spread the wealth around, and bring everybody out of this lockdown, this shutdown of an economy as fast as possible. So no trickle down, hand it out in big lumps.
That's well said, sir. Well, unfortunately, I mean, we're kind of at time here, and I'm sure that I've kept you longer than I needed to keep you this evening, and I do apologize. So, because that's, I'm sure you're probably right. All right. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about this evening before we call it quits here?
No, I'm good. But you did mention something about Sarah Ferguson.
I did. Yeah, she has said that the quite frankly, I think it's disgusting, but she said that she believes that the coronavirus is a punishment for the fecklessness of mankind. Were her exact words.
Do you know what? Although it is a terrible thing to say, she's sort of right, because I believe that we should not have been letting Chinese scientists in an unsafe laboratory be conducting the kind of research that they are. I still think, in my personal opinion, that the Wuhan virus was produced in a laboratory, accidentally released, whether it was by somebody taking the virus into their own bodies and spreading it around, or the selling of laboratory experimental animals at the wet market in Wuhan from the research center. So that's what I think. I don't have any concrete proof. It's just a gut feeling. But if Sarah Ferguson thinks that what's happening to the world now is a punishment for us being feckless, then I think to a certain extent we have been feckless, because we've let people globally, if there was a global consciousness, has let people do these kind of experiments without the proper controls, checks and measures. And how many coronaviruses have come out of China in the last 20 years? You guys must have this at the tips of your fingers. We were talking about it earlier on. None?
Coronaviruses? You know what a coronavirus actually is, right? There's a whole family of them. So there's about 7 or 8 different coronaviruses. A coronavirus
to make me look smarter. How many flu-like viruses have come out of China?
Okay. We had the H1N1. Yeah, we had H1N1, but they're saying, of course, the Chinese are saying, well, that came from a pig farm in Mexico. Yeah, sure. They're also saying that this one came from the U.S. That's what they're saying. And you know what? We can talk about that another time. I have my own opinions on that.
Yeah, sure.
But,
sure.
What about you? You're looking at least to answer your question here, and I'll let Bruce take over. To answer your question, you're looking at the H1N1, you're looking at SARS, and you're looking at this one. So at least three main liners that have gone international that we know of.
Yeah, and that's since about 2008.
Spanish flu is also rumored to have started there, though it was
Spanish flu.
It was Spanish the worst started in there. Spain. Yeah, that's where it's rumored to have started, yes.
Okay.
Was the rumor that it was bodies left on the battlefield after the Japanese invasion of Manchuria?
I'm not exactly sure the origination of it, but yeah, that sounds about right.
Okay. That's an interesting one. I hadn't heard that one. Yeah, I've studied that. I've studied that war.
If you research that and see if that's the origin of the rumor, then you can keep that bit in and make me look really clever. If not, cut it out. Thank you.
That's interesting, because I've studied the Japanese invasion of Manchuria. That's interesting. I'll have to look into that.
That was before World War One, wasn't it?
It was. It was, and that it was it was the Russo-Japanese War, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I've studied that, and it's that's the same one. There's been a lot of conflicts between the Japanese and the Russians over the years, and this, I mean, not even any that are. I mean, you had some that were in sanctioned war, and then you had some that just weren't. So
yeah,
there's a lot of conflicts that have gone on in that region of the world for a long period of time. But yeah, I believe that was the Russo-Japanese War. I believe that's the one you're thinking of.
Well, I'm going to have to say goodnight, gentlemen. Sorry.
No, that's all good. No, it's all good. I kept you far too long, and I do apologize for that. But it's always good to get your take. When do we get you back again? Are we getting you on Tuesday?
Tomorrow's Tuesday. Let's go
Thursday. Thursday. Okay. Yeah, all right. Sounds good, because I got another laundry list of things to cover that we didn't get to tonight. So, okay. All right. as always, thank you to all the listeners for taking the time to sit down and listen to us today. Please, if you like what you're hearing, follow, like, subscribe, all those things that you do as a listener. We really do appreciate it. Please tell people about us. And any feedback that you all have as a listener, doesn't matter if it's good or if it's bad or if it's critical of what we do, or if you have any suggestions, show tips, those types of things, things you want us to look into, please do drop us a line at your convenience, if you so choose, at tips@dynamicindependence.com. Thank you for your time tonight, Marty, and Bruce, I will see you tomorrow.